There's a savant who created a city called Urville, and it doesn't exist. It exists only in his mind, but he's turned it into pictures and drawings, and it's absolutely incredible. If that were a real city, it would be one of the most magnificent ones ever. We're going to be back more. We'll take your calls, more stories with Diane Hennessy-Powell right here on Coast to Coast AM. Diana, these savants, why is it when they bump their heads or something like that happens, they become one? Not everybody, obviously, but some.
Yeah. Well, there's something called the acquired savant syndrome. And usually what has happened is that there's been an injury to the left temporal lobe. And there have been cases in which there's one in which a boy was accidentally shot in his left temporal lobe. There are people who develop a condition called frontotemporal dementia. And if it starts in the left temporal lobe first, then you'll start to see the savant syndrome. And what's happening is that this most recently evolved part of our brain, as I mentioned earlier, that's what gets in the way of certain abilities. And a lot of the savant abilities are right brain abilities, things like art and music and intuition, those sorts of things.
You know, I was looking at some other savants and some of the incredible things that they do. You mentioned the one who played Tchaikovsky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was mentioning the one from France who has created a city in his own head.
Right.
I mean, it is amazing.
It's not just in his head, but he's actually drawn it.
He's drawing the pictures out now.
Yeah.
That's, if they could build one like he has drawn, it would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Right.
it's something else. I mean, what other abilities do they have? I mean, can they remote view, for example?
They can have... I haven't heard any of them say that they can remote view, but one of the things that's fascinating to me is that they can have knowledge without knowing. So, for example, Daryl Trufford asked this one savant when he was testing him, he asked him to draw a periodic table. And periodic tables are pretty complex.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And so this kid actually drew a periodic table and put in all of the elements where they belonged and their atomic weights, and even used the Latin letters, you know, which are used instead of the initials for the elements. But he had never seen one. And so maybe that is remote viewing. I mean, they wouldn't use that term for it, but it's where is that information stored? That's what fascinates me. Is, you know, where is that information stored? I mean, it's as though you know how they have these smartphone apps where you can just point at something and you find out all the information
yeah.
you want to know about that item. I mean, it's as though their brains are almost like that sometimes.
What do you mean by your UECs, unexplained experiences of consciousness? What is that?
Well, that's a term that I recently coined, and it's the reason why I coined it is that instead of calling things like telepathy and precognition and the phenomena of these identical twins raised apart and these other you know, whether you want to call them paranormal phenomena or psychic phenomena, they're unexplained experiences of consciousness. And I think that term isn't loaded the way that ESP has become loaded. Now what happens is that you say ESP or precognition, a lot of scientists who might otherwise be interested turn their head, you know. But you can publish a paper, like Dean Radin did, you can publish a paper on presentiment. And what's interesting is presentiment, I don't know if you're familiar with this paper, but...
We know Dean.
Yeah, you know Dean. Well, he showed that prior to someone actually being shown a picture that would evoke a known response, like, you know, a bunny rabbit usually doesn't evoke fear. It usually evokes, if anything, you know, just a kind of awe, cute kind of response.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, some, you know, something that's bloody or, you know, fearful.
Like dangerous.
Dangerous, you know, would evoke another response. And so what he was doing was he was measuring the response in the gut. We have a neural net down there. Measuring this, you can do, just like you can do a brain wave scan, he could also do one on the gut. And he was measuring the response down there. And what he found was that prior to showing, just you know, a fraction of a second, but prior, just a fraction of a second prior to his actually showing the picture, they would already start to have this change in anticipation of it. So that there'd be a change that only occurred when it was a scary picture. And it was only just before the scary pictures that they would have that change, that sort of thing. And so, as Dean said, and I agree with him, even if it's only a split second ahead of time, just being ahead of time tells us that our time, our concept of time is incorrect.
Let's take some calls here for you, Diane. Let's go to Rick in Orange, California to get things started. Rick, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Diane. I want to talk to you about a state of consciousness I've been in since I was a young child. And I think it's a primal, what I'd call a primal consciousness, or it's one in which I just know things.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed up early. They sent me up to Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois to be looked at, and then when I was like 5 or 6. And then in high school, when I was in calculus and trig, I would just write the answers down on the test, and they put me in the English classroom to take the math test. And then Ms. Tolan asked me, she said, how did you get this answer, Rick? And I explained to her, she said, well, I didn't teach you how to do it that way. She said, how did you get this one? And I explained to her, she said, I didn't teach you how to do it that way. So she said, let me get this correct. You come into my class, you listen to my lectures, but you don't use anything I teach you. And then when you sit down with a problem, you figure out your own way to answer it and do it all in normal testing time. And I said, well, you know, I said, every problem has its inherent answer within it. And she goes, yeah, I do get that. But she says, how do you do this? And I said, I don't know. I just know.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a place, I think, and I was listening to you talk about people who don't have access to this part of themselves due to analytical aspects of their mind, and I completely agree with you. There is a stillness that I live in inside that other people don't always seem to have. They fill themselves up with thoughts and analytical parts, and it doesn't allow them to perceive something that comes from a part of ourselves. It's like God consciousness. It's like God knows everything because that's what he gave us. When they say we're made in his image, it's because we possess consciousness. That's the gift he gave us.
Mm-hmm.
And how he made us like himself. And so there is something about this that I've been studying in myself all my life. I'm 62 now. And there is a... I've even gotten to the point where I can transfer this awareness to other people and and help them become more conscious. And I mean, I could do it with you two right now simultaneously if you wanted me to do that, and even with the audience, actually. And it's a process where I just ask people to hold up their right hand, and then I show them the layers of their auric field, and I can do it with one or two or however many. But it's this awareness that we all come in with, and we lose touch with it through the acquisition of language, basically.
Right. Yes, that's right. And I think that's one of the reasons why cultures in which you have high usage of written language, you see less of these phenomena. And what's interesting is even cultures in which you have, like we do, where you write from, you know, to the left to the right, that actually that increases your usage of your left hemisphere, as opposed to languages that you have in China, where you're writing, you know, pictograms, and you're also doing it vertically. You're using your brain in a very different way, and our culture is so left brain oriented.
You know, they're starting to put chips in people's brains, right?
Oh gosh, yes.
What do you think of that? They think it's going to help them.
It's really scary. It's really scary. I mean, I heard that someone said the other day, and they were saying this as that they said, by some year, you know, that they're saying basically, you know, within the next 40 years, there will be no disability. And what they mean by that is that everything that is wrong with somebody is going to be replaceable, you know. And when they're talking about the brain, what they're talking about is chips that stimulate activity in the brain,
mm-hmm.
in the areas where they believe that that pattern of activity is the normal activity. That's the way that we want the activity to be. So they're talking about actually treating mental illness with, you know, these sorts of things. And it's one thing to be, you know, having glitches, software glitches, and problems with your cell phone. It's another one if it's some chip that's in your brain. And we don't know enough about either the technology nor the brain and consciousness to be, you know, even doing that sort of thing.
Next up, we go to Ian in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Ian. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was calling about the, you know, the autistic savants, and
sure.
I was curious if you were familiar with us. His name is Stephen Wiltshire.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just recently became familiar with him about him doing his cityscape of the New York skyline.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. What I read was that, you know, he did a flyover for about 20 minutes, and then with a pen, so no mistakes possible, he recreated the skyline to a T. And I guess I was calling about, like, I guess you would consider him an autistic savant as far as, like, in an artistic sense.
Yeah, they call him the human camera, don't they?
Yes, they call him the human camera, and he's done Rome, he's done London, and what's fascinating is that when he draws, like when he did Rome, he starts at one end of the canvas, and he just moves like almost like he's coming out of a printer across the canvas. most of us would draw, you know, an outline first and then fill things in, but he does it far more you know, systematically.
And he's accurate, right?
And he's accurate down to the windows. I mean, you know, the number of arches. They even, there's a great YouTube video showing him doing it, and they even thought that he had something wrong, and then they went and looked at what it would look like if you were in a helicopter looking at it from that angle, and they're like, nope, he's got it right from that
His
angle.
Brain, I guess, what, almost like photographs it. That's why they call him the human camera.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And since he was a little child, he's been able to do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. 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 And he's a pretty, pretty amazing guy.
Now, can they communicate, you know, with people?
It depends. It depends. I mean, I know that Stephen Wiltshire couldn't communicate very well at all. You know, for a lot of the ones who become artistic, their artwork becomes a form of communication for them. The same thing for the music.
Are most of the savants men or women? Kids, you know, teenagers?
Most of them are men.
How come?
First of all, most savantism is found more often in autism than it is in any other kind of disability.
Let me ask you this. If you're a savant, what are the odds of you being autistic?
Okay, it's easier to do it the other way around. If you're autistic, the odds of you being a savant are about 10%.
If you're autistic, the odds of you being a savant are 10%. Okay.
Right.
But I mean,
if you're a savant, is
every savant autistic?
I'm sorry?
Is every savant autistic?
No.
Okay.
In order to be, the difference between a savant and a genius is that the savant has abilities that would be considered a genius if they otherwise were...
had everything else.
Had everything else, that's right. So it's the fact that they have those genius skills in spite of the fact that they can't do other things.
That is interesting. Okay, the word, of course, means knowing, I think, in French, right?
Yes.
Savant.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to that question that was... mentioned earlier by the gentleman when he was talking about this state of knowing where he just says that the answers are just inherent.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this movie that I saw recently that, have you seen My Life as a Turkey?
My Life as a Turkey?
Yes.
No, I missed that one. I'll put it high on my charts, though.
Well, you won't want to eat. You won't want to eat turkey at Thanksgiving again.
I go, I go see things like The Fourth Kind and stuff. Like that.
Well, what I liked about the movie is that this man who always had wanted to study wild turkeys had a shipment of eggs sent to him.
Okay, and he raised them.
And he raised them. And there were 16 of them. He raised them out in the wild. He took them out into the forest, and they automatically knew what to eat, what not to eat, what was dangerous, and he learned from them. Here they are, fresh little hatchlings. And he's following them around What was the most fascinating thing was when they came to a tree stump that had been logged, they made this noise he had never heard before. It was like they were all sort of chirping around, like, what's wrong here? Why did this happen? And so it's interesting how much information, this ability, it seems like there's some innate ability in us that where we can extract information.
That is bizarre.
Yeah.
But it does work that way. All right, stay with us, Diane. More phone calls to come in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. And again, Diane's website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And of course, Diane Hennessy, our special guest tonight, as we talk about her work, the ESP Enigma. Back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Diane Hennessy Paul with us, your phone calls as well. Diane, it's a shame we don't have the Duke University doing its special types of work in the supernatural consciousness, ESP. The Ryan Institute was something else, huh?
Right, right.
Now, there's an offshoot of it, but I don't think it's associated with Duke at all.
Yeah. No, it's unfortunate that in our country it's really not, the research is not really well supported. But there's still some research going on, of course.
Back to the calls we go. Let us go to West Laco, Texas. Hey, Josh, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, it's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
I just had a question about ESP. I was wondering, by any chance, if you had an ESP ability, would you be able to transmit thoughts into people's mind, or would you be able to necessarily tell what someone's thinking, or would you be able to use ESP to heal people in any way? Because I believe that I have these type of abilities because, me and my girlfriend were randomly sitting down, and this happens quite a bit, and I'm thinking something. And I say it out loud and I'm craving this, and she's just, I was just thinking, she tells me, I was just thinking I want a Kit Kat bar. When I said, I'm craving a Kit Kat bar, if I'm craving, like a Whataburger or something, And she just randomly says, you know, I was just thinking that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm reading, you know, like her mind or, you know, it happens with a lot of things too, you know, not just food items, but it's a lot of different weird coincidences. So
right.
I'm just wondering if EFT would have that ability.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It can be hard to discern when you're a couple like that, who's the receiver and who's the sender, or is it that you're both sending and receiving?
Especially her, because she has Native American blood in her, and her parents are, like, her mom and her brother both have, you know, psychic tendencies. They're able to talk to deceased family members in their sleep, you know, when they're in their dream world.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's really, we don't know what's what. And I also think that EFT might have something to do with witnessing the paranormal, which I have, and my family's been followed before. So I think maybe like my family also has some type of lineage, because there's been some paranormal happenings going on from what I've been able to document over the last 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, if you have the ability with ESP, Diane, I think you can put yourself in somebody's dream, don't you?
Oh, sure. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can put yourself in there. And there are also people who've had shared dreams. We don't know how often that happens, because usually people don't remember their dreams, and they also don't share them with people. But there have been many accounts. In fact, there was a whole book written about shared dreams.
That would be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to do that. Let's go to Kelsey in Denver, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Hey, Kelsey, go ahead.
Hello. I heard you mention the hero's journey, mm-hmm. and so maybe you've read Joseph Campbell, but I was also wondering if your work, or if you've studied the works of Carl Jung and how he might have influenced you with different levels of consciousness, like his concept of collective consciousness, and also his writings and records of his own dreams.
Oh, I love Carl Jung. I mean, I think that he was a man before his time, and of the various psychoanalysts, he's the one that I would say that I respect, and whose work I actually use. I use a lot of his concepts, and the collective conscious unconscious is something that you know, these archetypes that get played out universally. I think that as a psychiatrist, I see exactly that over and over and over again. And in fact, it's funny, because when I'm working with a patient, oftentimes I will, after they've told me just a little bit, I already know sort of what. Not in a psychiatric, you know, sort of, you know, it's not a label thing. It's more of an archetypal sort of thing. I have a sense of what that person has been through, and so it's fascinating. And his work on shadow work, and then synchronicities. I love synchronicities.
Oh, they're the best. They're the best. When they happen, they're very strange.
And, you know, and they seem to come in runs. You know, people will have them. They'll go through a period in which they have an increased incidence of them.
I mean, like somebody, you know, the phone rings and you know who's on the other line. How do people do that?
Well, I would say that's that telepathic connection. That sort of thing happens to so many of us. The things that's what surprises me about science, is that so many of these phenomena happen so often, so regularly to so many of us, and there's been such an not just an unwillingness to look at it, but like a resistance to looking at it. And I was thinking about comparing it to this woman that I saw recently. She came out with a book about animal behavior, and she was talking about how Jane Goodall had said that she had to be so careful in her writing when she first was writing that she would get accused of, you know, projecting, you know, human emotions and things like that onto the chimpanzees. And she would have to say things like, she acted as though, you know, she acted at the way that a human would, mm-hmm. if a human were, you know. And just having to be, you know, very respectful, you know, of the chimpanzees. She put her foot down, though, when they actually wanted her to use it. You know, they took all of the he's and she's out of her writing, and she said, no, but at least give them the dignity of their gender. And then over time, I think she's helped scientists to see that they have personalities and emotions and et cetera. They're very, very similar to us in many ways. And yet, that was something that not that long ago, scientists were resistant to that.
Well, science is always resistant to most things, aren't they?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, someone asked me, about science and how, you know, it's always a struggle. It always gets resisted at first, and then it gets accepted as common knowledge later.
Let's go to Ray, truck driving in Oregon. First time caller, Ray, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
This is your little history here. About 6 years ago, I had some lumber fall from the top of a semi, hit me in the face and head, and it was pretty bad. And I've been skeptical of this since this has been going on. And I have, I don't know if they're visions or I predicted 4 car accidents, anywhere from within a week to within hours, a fire. And then last week, I start seeing someone getting hit by my truck. Well,
oh boy.
Then a few days later, this guy walks out in the middle of the road. I had to lock up my brakes, and he just kept walking across the road and got hit by a car coming the other way.
Uh-huh.
And this is scaring the heck out of me, and I don't know what it is and or what's going on. My wife is a firm believer in all this stuff, and I just didn't know if you had any sense to make of this.
Yeah. It's well, there's something called crisis telepathy, and it's much easier for people who otherwise don't experience psychic abilities. It's much easier for them to pick up on things where it's a crisis, and so it seems like there's a stronger, you know, just a stronger signal, if you will. And so for some reason, you're picking up on all of these crises that are around you.
It gets pretty scary at times. I mean, especially the last one.
Yeah.
But this has happened over the last 6 years.
It's happened
After the accident, there was a few things that I tell my wife. I said, I'm getting that vision again. There's going to be a car accident. And the fourth one was within like 2 hours, and I had kids in the car. It was Halloween night, and the car ran this red light, just missed me because I was waiting to make the left turn, and this truck ran the red light and slammed into the car that was coming the oncoming way.
Too bad they didn't have the ability to, huh?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad, but it gets, I don't know. I just don't know what's going on. And
Are you experiencing these as dreams? I couldn't hear you very well.
No.
They're visions. You just get like a flash in your...
I get a flash and I start seeing something, and with anywhere from a few days to a few hours, what I'm seeing happens.
Yeah.
A month ago, I told my wife, I said, there's going to be a fire. There's going to be a fire somewhere. I'm getting worried. And I'm thinking it's at home, and here it happened at work. And as I'm driving on I-5, some of our equipment at work was on fire.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go.
And you have no idea why it started 6 years ago. There isn't really anything that you can
aside from me having this accident where the lumber fell from 14 feet off the top of my truck and hit me in the face and head and broke me up pretty good.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for some reason, some people seem to specialize in a, you know, one particular thing that they tune into. You don't get any other sorts of precognitions about positive things?
You know what, Diane, when people are doing this, how many don't react and they should have?
Oh, you mean like could they have prevented something?
Yeah, they just don't listen to that little voice.
Oh.
Everybody's done that at some time.
Yeah. And then there are the people who listen to that voice and then they get home and they turn on the news and they go, wow, I'm glad I listened to it.
Let's go.
I had a patient who stayed in Boston an extra day. She was scheduled to be on one of those planes that flew out of Boston in 9/11.
9/11. Ugh.
Yeah. She stayed in Boston just as a whim.
Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland, wildcard line. Frank, go ahead. Thanks.
George, I've been with you 8 months, haven't missed the program.
I love it.
I don't like to use the word obsessed or hooked, but you find a word for me. Doctor, yeah. I've had this situation back there a few years ago where I was waiting for a friend to come out. I had drove up and waited in the driveway, and his sister was on the swing. And this was on a farm. The swing was made of rope. And I said, that swing is going to break. Mm-hmm. And she was going high. You know how some of the kids go up over the swing and come back the other way? I said to myself, I can't tell her to get off the swing, but I concentrated on the rope breaking at the low level when it was like 2 feet off the ground, whereas she was going up to 12 feet and trying to go over the top. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it broke. As soon as I concentrated on it for 3 seconds, it broke, and she fell about 2 feet and got up, wasn't hurt. Mm-hmm. Now, was the rope old and she was overweight, or did I cause it to happen? and then this other thing, savants. What do you have on savants practicing religion, and has there ever been a recorded incident of a savant being abducted as some people seem to be abducted? And then I want you to decipher a dream for me if you could.
I've never heard of the abduction cases like that, Diane. Have you?
No, I've never heard any savants claim to be abducted, but several of them say they feel like aliens. You know, it feels that different to them living here.
It is amazing. Frank, I've got to take a couple calls before the break, so we'll get your dream a little bit later on. And you don't interpret dreams, though, do you, Diane?
Oh, sure. Love to.
Do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
As a psychiatrist?
As everything.
Sigmund Freud again, huh?
No, not Sigmund Freud.
Did you study him in college?
A little bit. But I never really could. I just never really could get into it.
If that
had been what psychiatry was about, I would not have gone into psychiatry.
Really?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess in those days, that's all they had.
Well, actually, I went to Johns Hopkins for my medical school, and I trained there. And Adolf Meyer started, he was the first chairman of the Department of Psychiatry there, and he had what he called a biosocial model. And he looked at people as both biological and social and beings, you know, and looked at their psychology. And he was really very holistic in his approach to psychiatry. And he was a contemporary of Freud. And that way of approaching psychiatry has continued there.
All right, next up, we've got Alan in Kankakee, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. It's
sure
quite
thing.
A privilege to be speaking with a media phenom.
Nah. Thanks, anyway.
Anyway, I have this ability that I've always had. I play woodwinds. But with the flute, I can hear a song that I've never heard before. And within one or two notes, I already know what the notes are going to be ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
And got the fingers down on it. Mm-hmm. And it almost defies the amount of time it would take to process it. It's mm-hmm. almost like I'm seeing ahead of what the next note is going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no clue how I can do that. And I experience the same thing. I shoot firearms, and I can see and visualize a target, and without using sights, it's almost the same thing that I can reach up and just point and instinct shoot. And it's kind of, to me, it seems like the same kind of thing is going on in my brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I've heard similar stories. It's fascinating. Or I've heard people knowing exactly what somebody's going to say right before they say it. And it's not a reading their mind. It's more like what you're saying, where
it's like jumping ahead.
Yeah, it's that you're jumping ahead. Exactly. Exactly.
But anyway, I mean, is this something that's neurological or?
I think that there's a way in which people are using their brain differently when they're having these experiences than those people who aren't. That's a lot of what I talk about in my book, as well as evidence for these phenomena. But there's the area of the brain, the limbic system, which is underneath the cortex, and it's the part of the brain that's involved in sleep. It's most active when we're sleeping, but it's also involved in emotions and emotional processing. That part of the brain, when it's more active than the cortex, which is the outer part of the brain, you can have experiences like that. Nitrous oxide, or laughing gas, can cause people to have a phenomenon called future memory.
Let's talk about that, Diane, and much more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.